Back in the 1980s, when Edgar Meyer first showed up in town, he played with various pickup groupings of other virtuosos. One of those Telluride Drams crystallized into one of the most celebrated supergroups in acoustic music, Strength in Numbers. Later, Strength in Numbers helped seed the Telluride House Band, a festival institution that comes together only over the course of the 4 days of the festival. Meyer became a fixture of Sam Bush and the House Band, described as the players who set the tone for excellence for Telluride Bluegrass year after year, and this year should be no exception. 40 years from that auspicious beginning, Edgar Meyer returns, or about 40 years anyway, from that auspicious beginning, Edgar Meyer returns to Telluride with a different classical bluegrass experiment, this one a trio, Lark, Roman, and Meyer. The group performs on Sunday, June 21st, to bring Telluride Bluegrass Festival to an awe-inspiring close, that is before Golden Boy actually brings down the curtain on the weekend. This is Susan Vibrock, Telluride Inside and Out, delighted to be speaking once again with Edgar Meyer. Our last conversation was in 2016 on the occasion of Edgar's 25th anniversary with Telluride Bluegrass. Edgar, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule to join me.
I'm delighted to. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So this year you celebrate, what is it, 35, 40 years playing with Telluride Bluegrass? You can clarify that.
The official record says that my first year playing with what became Strength in Numbers was 87. I always believed it was 85, but it's certainly one of those two. It's almost got to be.
I'll take either one. But yeah. What actually drew you to Telluride in the first place?
Well, I was going to the Aspen Music Festival as a student in 82 and 83. And one of those years, I believe 82, I was already friends with Bela and Sam. And Bela just came and got me from Aspen, and we drove down to Telluride. And I sat in on a Vassar Clements set with Bela. And pretty crazy. I mean, I remember that Vassar had these medleys that had like, you know, six parts to them. And I'd never heard it before. And there we were. But it was wonderful. I was, I was very attracted to the music. Gradually understood that that Telluride was a really central point for a lot of the music that I was interested in.
Okay, great. So it's clearly established you're a Telluride and Rocky Grass veteran. What does this particular Box Canyon and this particular audience of Festivarians pull out of you that a concert hall doesn't?
Well, it's... I mean, it is awe-inspiring to look out and see the canyon. There's nothing quite like it. I've always loved being in Colorado, as I just mentioned. But it's also, you know, it's a gathering place for, I guess it feels like family. And it's not just, you know, the musicians. I mean, like my son, of course, this will be the first year he hasn't been in his life, and he's 33. He has another tour that he's in the middle of, and he can't get out of it. But the the majority of my closest friends have an association with the festival, and there are times we don't see each other often, even if we live in the same town, but we always see each other there. And so that's important. And then it's also a family situation with the audience where you've got, you know, at this point already third generation people in the audience. Yeah. And so it just feels like we've overall just kind of lived this life together.
Perfect answer. Thank you for that one. So you've crossed between classical, bluegrass, jazz, and folk your entire life, performing with the likes of Yo-Yo Ma, Chris Thiele, Bella Fleck. At this point, do those genres even feel like separate worlds to you, or is it all one language? Is it all just music?
It's fairly in between. It's not all just music, but it's also, but it is. I tend to like to say that it's like a lot of different dialects of the same language. But one has to remember that you can have different dialects that actually can't even understand each other. So I think if you bring that in, then it makes pretty good sense. You know, I've never felt like opera and bluegrass were very good friends. But overall, you know, most music uses a lot of the same fundamental ideas. And also, an aspect of that that's, I think, important in my thinking is that there isn't any pure music. You know, bluegrass was a hybrid, you know, in 1945. And then all of a sudden, you know, now you have people wanting to do it, you know, in a pure way. It was a bastard to start with. And so is classical music, and so is everything else. The process is always combining different things, and that's okay.
Okay. So how, when, and why did Lark, Roman, and Meyer come together as a trio? You said early on that you, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay.
No, you go
you
ahead.
Said early on that you and Roman and Lark would make a good trio. At least that's the rumor. Rumor has it you said that. So what did you hear in the music of your two colleagues or sense in their performance that made you sure that you'd be a good grouping before you really played together?
I had played with each of them in different settings. I think once with Joshua in Oklahoma at a festival they were both at, and in Australia with Tessa, I had a manager who had really wanted me to meet her, and we played together a little there. And I would start with that they are state-of-the-art, remarkable classical players. And then I think the other piece of the puzzle is that they really love other music and are really interested in playing other music. And they're both interested in writing music and trying to see what they can do. So that combination of skill, you know, and a really big interest make them unique. And I've got these string trios. The first ones I wrote in 1986, 87, and 88 that I have not completely documented, and that became important to me. So I called them up, and we started playing those pieces, and then I wrote us a new one also. And that's been very satisfying. You know, we just recorded them in January. It's going to be a while before they're out. I've got another record I've got to get out first, and it's going to take a while. But they've been able to, you know, to bring that music up to a place, you know, that is, I don't think string players like them actually existed when those pieces were written.
Wow. Okay.
So they've been able to take it to an amazing place, yeah.
Yep. Yet, the violin-cello-bass combination is unusual. You talked about it giving you the full range of color and counterpoint that you seek in performance. So what can you do compositionally with these three instruments that you can't with a standard string trio?
Yeah, it is a instrumentation I've used a lot, and I guess there's two aspects of it that I would point out. First of all, you know, I'm a guy who likes three instruments, or three voices, I should say more properly. You know, at the end of the day, the harmony that, you know, that I have spent the most time in, and almost all the music that is the most common, you know, if it has harmony, it tends to be triadic. So, you know, I mean, there's classical music makes a lot of noise about, you know, Bach's four voice chorales, and of course they're the height of art, but there's usually a, there's usually a doubled note in, on the most of the verticalities, chords, if you will, in a Bach chorale. But some of my favorite Bach is in three voices. Some of the trio sonatas, there's a wealth of pieces in three voices by Bach. And it's just something I'm very attracted to. There is, for me, it's just the right amount. And so starting off that, and then if I'm going to be doing a string trio, I want to be, I want to have a bass in the trio. So it's going to be mm-hmm. non-standard to start with, because bass is non-standard for pretty much any chamber music.
Right.
And so I found that by using cello instead of a viola or another violin, it gave the bass and the cello a chance to use the entire instrument. Like I can play it, whereas if I, I wrote a string quintet in the 90s, and so that's string quartet plus bass, and mm-hmm. I found that I could not spend as much time in the entire instrument because there was already too many people there in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So with the cello and the bass, if I want to, if I want to send us, scrambling up the fingerboard, there's room. And or if we want to go down low, or if I want to go low or whatever, there's just enough room for me and the cellist to play the whole instrument instead of being a little bit restricted. So that's my best summary of why I gravitate toward that instrumentation. And these string trios actually predate doing the same instrumentation with O'Connor and Yo-Yo.
Okay, thank you. You spent a career refusing to let the bass be regarded only as a supporting instrument, a kind of afterthought. Do you still feel like you're arguing that case, or has the instrument's reputation finally caught up with your reality?
It's a tricky subject. I think that the instrument is much better known in terms of being more capable than people might have thought. That said, the truth of the matter is that playing the bass line might still be the thing that the bass does best. Mm-hmm. And so, there have been people historically on instrument who decided that the bass was just a solo instrument, or that's what they wanted to do. And God bless it, that's fine. But, I think my interest has been, to be able to put the instrument in a situation where it can have a real dialogue with the other instruments. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons that I was attracted to a string band as opposed to, for example, a jazz trio with piano and drums and possibly with horns also. The volume differential between the bass and the drums and the piano is horrific. That defines the whole experience. It's true. On the other hand, some of the most, I wouldn't hedge this bet at all. The most creative use of the double bass has been in jazz, without mm-hmm. question. But it was the acoustics of it were intimidating to me. And playing in a string band, I found a lot more chance for dialogue. And I was super attracted to that music and just loved the fit. I've forgotten the question.
The question was, has the bass finally reached a sort of transcendent position rather than being an afterthought?
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess I'll summarize. It's not. A bass is not a violin, and it can't do what a violin can do, but it can do a lot more than maybe people thought at one point. And it can be, it can definitely take over the melody from time to time. And I still play programs where, you know, I'm only a soloist or only playing. Well, even when I play with piano, for instance, you know, I play some bass lines. And even if I play alone, you know, there's going to be bass lines within that music. So I'm never totally divorced from playing a bass line, no matter what I'm doing. But, you know, I think my very favorite probably is situations where there's an interesting dialogue.
Right. And bringing our dialogue close to a close, a few more questions. You came up learning bass from your father starting at age 5. Now you teach at Curtis. I also recall at one point you had an online school. What is the
I think that's probably not accurate. I don't remember having an online school.
Oh, okay. Okay, I thought you taught online for briefly, years ago at Bluegrass. But
maybe I did something I don't remember. Yes, I am a Curtis.
So what's the one thing about music you find hardest to actually teach your students?
Yes, a lot of the most important parts you really can't teach anyway. I think you know, the thing that, I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to doing it, and they're all important. But I might be able to pose this more easily in the negative. It can be dispiriting to me if a student is out of balance and they care more about the bass Olympics and also, you know, certain vocational concerns than, you know, just a pure love and curiosity about music. Pure love and curiosity is not going to get you there. You also got to find a way to play the instrument. You got to make some money. You got to find a way to have a career. But I just feel like those things have to be in balance, and it should be the love and the curiosity driving the train. And I don't know how to teach that. You know, you certainly want to try to teach it by example. But that's a hard one to change. They either come in really curious or they don't, and maybe it changes over time, you know. And also, you know, I hope that I have been able to, with my friend and colleague Hal Robinson, who teaches with me, to establish a culture, and so they where the creativity is more valued than it might have been 20 years ago.
Got it. After 7 Grammys, a MacArthur Fellowship, and decades of other laurels, what, if anything, still feels genuinely unsolved or unfinished for you as a musician?
I'm in the middle of it. I mean, the recording those string trios that had not been fully documented was huge, and so was recording 4 different bass concertos that were written over a 30-year time span, you know, in 10-year increments. None of that is out yet, but it will be over the next couple of years. So, you know, that's just remarkably important to me, partially because it's less exposed. You know, some of the, if I were to say it kind of crudely, the amount of exposure of certain things I've done tends to be proportional to how famous the people I was doing it with were. In other words, it's not being driven by me, you know, because I'm not famous enough. But in the cases where there were certain people involved, all of a sudden everybody knows about that work. And this is a bunch of work that I think is less exposed and may mean as much or more than anything else to me. And I've been able to live long enough to get it done. You know, and
wonderful.
I don't quite have it out, but it is recorded.
Terrific. So what are you looking forward to most about returning to Telluride Bluegrass number 52?
Same as always, seeing my people, seeing all of our good friends and their families, and honestly, the whole audience. And it's a place I've spent my life, and feel very lucky to be able to continue to spend time there.
And we feel very lucky to have you coming back year after year. So this has been Susan V. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out. I've been speaking with Edgar Meyer. He brings his new trio, which is Lark, Roman, and Meyer, to Telluride this year to pretty much close the show on Sunday, June 21st. Don't miss the set. Edgar, thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much.
Likewise.
Yeah.